Well, hello everyone and welcome. I have back for the third time, if I still have a YouTube channel, Rebecca from Blonde in the Belly of the Beast, also the host of The Backlash, or the co-host of The Backlash.
Yep. Host of The Backlash. You can find us at Real Backlash on YouTube, my YouTube channel, Blonde in the Belly of the Beast. I'm Rebecca Hargraves. Find me on Twitter at blondes_tweets. Check me out there.
While we're on the subject of The Backlash, I'm always confused. Are there two of you or are there three of you?
There are three of us. It's Cameron McGregor, Dave Riley, myself, and then we do a Monday interview show, and Cameron, he's just far too busy to do that show.
He doesn't come on to that show. All right.
He travels a lot.
I've noticed that sometimes when you do your own show, it's the three of you, but then that dude is not on when you have guests. That's why it's confusing. All right.
Yep, he's on Wednesdays. Yep.
Okay. So, all right. Interesting. It's not like Fabulous Freebirds rule or something like that. In pro wrestling, they used to have tag teams, but some tag teams had three members, and they used to defend the belts on what they call the three, i.e. any two members could be like, you could be facing, Demolition did it later on as well. You could be, let's say you and Dave were the tag champs, but you decided to send Connor and Dave in, they'd be liable to, you could beat them for the belt too. That's how it used to work,
Okay.
Anyway, it's called the
Freebirds. We should institute some more pro wrestling into our show.
I'll just remind people, promo code SHORJAN gets you 25% off all courses. In fact, by the time this airs, the SHORJAN promo is probably over, but let's say it's the 2nd of February or something like that when this goes out. Try it. Just try your luck. It'll tell you if the code has expired or not. I think they're set to expire on the 31st, but you can try your luck. You wanted to talk today about pronatalism. This is a big topic in America, although it has started to creep its way back into British discourse as well, surprisingly, for various different reasons, because the birth rate has become an issue here. And, it's been a settled, like abortion and things like that have been a settled issue for a long time, but it started to creep back in, certainly on the LBC shitlib talk radio station I listen to in my car. They talk about it fairly regularly now, where they never used to. So what is it about pronatalism you wanted to discuss?
Well, it's such an interesting concept because I think generally on the right, we are pronatalist, which I would describe myself as, although I do think it's unfair that we have this expectation that we're going to outbreed immigrants. It's like we have this foreign influx and now we have to compete with them in this way. I don't think that that's particularly fair to the native population. But I do believe that people should have as many children as they can handle, as many as God will give them. But where we've crossed over on the right, I mostly want to talk about Simone and Malcolm Collins. I don't know if you're familiar with them. They spoke at the pronatalist conference. They have like problem glasses. I'm sure you've seen them around.
I've seen them. They're kind of always in glossy mags. The guy's got glasses. He looks a bit like Elvis Costello or something like that.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes.
They're a little bit trendy.
Yes.
Well. Like, are they rich? And I know the couple you mean. I know the couple you mean.
So we've crossed over on the right to having as many children through any means possible. And that can be like your Andrew Tate style harem, maybe kind of what JF is doing a little bit. And also using IVF, and they're basically using CRISPR to select embryos for certain traits like intelligence and things like that. And that's where I think we've really crossed the Rubicon in terms of pronatalism. And I think it's a huge problem on the right. I don't think people are talking about it enough. And so the people that are really the spokespeople for this kind of pronatalism are the Collins family. They have many children, and they are selecting for traits like intelligence, the things that will bolster their future success. And they want to have as many children as possible. Oh, I also saw an article about a European woman who wanted to have 100 children through surrogacy, through egg donation, through things like that. And then we're seeing a lot of sperm donation. And I think that there are major ethical problems with us engaging in pronatalism based on things like this. I think it's unnatural. I think IVF has a lot of problems, if you want to discuss that. Mm-hmm. And of course, all of the ethical concerns that surround this type of pronatalism.
Right. There's so many things to get into. I should mention I've been on a bit of a journey with this topic. My original view as a sensible centrist was that I was pro-abortion, right? And I'll tell you why. I looked at crime rates rocket in the 60s. And so you can look at the graph. They rocket in the 60s and 70s. They reach a peak in the 80s. And then in the 90s, they come straight down, right? Why did that happen then? There's all sorts of different explanations, lead and all this sort of stuff. But the actual reason is very simple. They made abortions easy. So the criminals who would have been doing crimes just weren't born. You're talking about your classic hip-hop areas here, right? Those kids who would have grown up to be the next Notorious B.I.G. or something, they just weren't born. So for a long time, my pure instrumentalist view was, okay, this is a good reason to have abortion. Like, it literally just reduces the crime rate. Okay, because it makes it easily available. Now, obviously, there are knock-on consequences and so on. That was my original view. Then, when I actually, I have a child myself, the whole process of pregnancy, seeing my daughter in the little thing, seeing actually how much you can recognize traits even when they're a little thing at 6 weeks old, and seeing all of that completely changed my view on this topic. I couldn't be cold and analytical anymore because I was like, well, I just saw what it was like, and I saw how important it was for the woman and all this sort of stuff. I also know the things that women go through that people don't talk about and things like that. And I just think, well, this is actually a more difficult topic than I ever thought it was, right? I can't look at it in instrumental terms. So from that point, I've been, broadly speaking, more towards, on the abortion issue. But then I still think there's too many people in the world. And for purely selfish reasons, I would like to reduce the world population so that there's less traffic on the roads. When I go and get my flat white in the morning, I would like less queues and things like that. And also, if you have a look at the populations that are growing the most, I don't see any reason for them to grow. I'm talking about whole continents worth of people here. And I wonder why there's, you listen to Elon Musk and people like this. Oh, we need more people all the time. We need growth. We need more people. We need growth. And I'm thinking, like, why? And so part of my brain thinks, are they just growing people to consume, like KFC? Like, what is the point of all these people? They're being born to like be fed stuff or to buy stuff because it's from an economic point of view, it's aggregate demand on a spreadsheet. It's GDP, if you understand it that way. And so, I had another kind of slight difference in my thinking when I read Julius Evola, and he was saying like, look, okay, there's biological matter, but if all of these people have no higher purpose, if they have no meaning in their lives, they're just existing as matter here. And frankly, every time I've been to a KFC or somewhere like that, I often think, especially when it's packed, or you've been to an airport recently.
Oh, yeah.
Where are all these people? So I then think, actually, I've had darker moments with people like, Klaus Schwab and Bill Gates, they want to bring down the world population. I'm thinking, actually, it's quite a base thing to want to do. You understand where I'm coming from, right?
No, definitely.
I have complicated views on this topic. But I'm not a big, we must pump the birth rate guy, because I just want, I feel like the world, this country certainly, was not built for as many people. It was built for like half as many people are here. And I want to be comfortable. I don't want to have to queue.
I understand. Think
better quality of life with fewer people in it.
Well, if you got rid of all of the nons in your country, then you would have no queue for your flat white. Now, would you? And I think the problem that you're describing is that we don't need more people in the world. We need more white people. We're only 7% of the world population, and that is shrinking. Now, I'm not an advocate of abortion for anybody of any race, because that child didn't do anything wrong. Mm-hmm. But the world population, overpopulation myth, it seems to be it's recycled every few years, and I have to hear about it. But the truth of the matter is if we all lived like they do in Tokyo, everybody in the world, which is an uncomfortable way to live, but every man, woman, and child could fit into Texas. I mean, the world is huge. It's vast. It's so many places. I drove from Idaho to Colorado, and there mm-hmm. would be hours and hours where there was just nothing, just absolutely nothing, totally undeveloped land. I mean, our country is huge. So I'm not really buying into the world population. It's population density issues is what really what we're discussing. But in terms of pronatalism, I guess when we speak about this on the right, we're basically just referring to white populations for clarity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So then the question is, why is the birth rate so low? Why does it keep on going down all the time? And part of me just, I mean, I look, this is like a worldwide trend. It happens in every rich country or every country that reaches modernity, the birth rate plummets. I mean, South Korea, Japan, you know, it happens basically anywhere that gets penicillin, refrigeration, you know, various degrees of automation and luxury. And then pivotally, women in work. Those, I mean, and it seems to me the real factors are those things there. Because once people have that, they're satisfied with two kids, typically three kids, something like that. They don't want to have, or they don't need to have, six, seven, eight kids, because half of them aren't dying anymore.
Right.
And then the other thing is women just start later. They have kids in their 30s or even in their early 40s now. Whereas back in the day, you'd start having kids when you're 18. Well, most people don't do that anymore because they're in work or they're in university or they don't want to ruin their career or something like that. Mm-hmm. Isn't that the basic issue here?
Yeah. Yes, and the breakdown of gender relations, of course, is an issue. Egalitarianism is unnatural, and I think that because of the divorce situation, women feel like they have to have financial independence. And a lot of men and women are looking at the situation and going, why should I bother? Especially if they're hopeless about the future of white people, if they're hopeless about the future of their respective nations, they're like, I don't really want to do that. And I'm sympathetic to that perspective as well. I mean, getting married and having a child, that can really blow up your life. But you also can get old and then it's like, what do you have left? Like, what have you given to the world? How have you contributed? And for the average woman to overcome, life is mundane and most people are average. To do something that's truly greater for the world than producing a well-adjusted child, like, you have to really be successful. And I don't think that most people have the capacity or the capability to do that. So for the average person, having children, investing in those children, doing a good job raising them, that is the greatest single contribution that you're going to give the world, that you're going to have for posterity, that's even possible for you.
All right. So why don't we get to now some of the issues that you've got, the ethical issues that you've got with this? I mean, what's the name of this couple again? This is the one with the funny...
Simone and Malcolm Collins.
Right. So the Collinses, right? What is your basic issue with what they're doing? I mean, you might say it's eugenics, but isn't this kind of for the betterment of the tribe, something like this.
Right. I believe that she has Jewish ancestry, so maybe not. But let's more broadly talk about...
Okay, so it is for the betterment of the tribe. It's a different one.
Quite literally, yeah. Let's talk more broadly about IVF and not in the case of the Collins. And we can get to that in a second, because they're using it for a eugenic purpose. But most people use IVF for a dysgenic purpose. So people that have infertility or health issues that otherwise... I hate to use the term a culling. You know, we were talking about it with disease. There are natural cullings in the world and reasons that people can't procreate. And by overcoming those scientifically, we are able to produce an increasingly dysgenic population. And we're going to see a host of problems down the line from people doing this. Right. So one of the ethical issues that I have with IVF outside of this dysgenic nature of it is that embryos are often destroyed because they're tested for aneuploidy. So what they do is they test like a patch on the outside of the embryo. And a lot of times there are abnormal cells on the outside of a normal embryo. And then the embryo just takes care of it. It repairs the cells. So the miscarriage rate for cells that you've tested or for embryos that you've tested and embryos that you haven't tested, they're not that different. Like there's not a lot of evidence that they're even selecting the highest quality. There's some subjective measures for embryo quality selection. So we're flushing down like destroying millions and millions and millions of probably healthy embryos. And people need to think about that. Like, really, really think about that. It is, I would say it's not the same as an abortion, but it is abortion adjacent. I'm not somebody that's like, nobody should be on birth control. I mean, you shouldn't be on birth control, but for other reasons. But for, in terms of actually destroying embryos, like there's an obvious ethical concern there. And really, are we doing a lot? You're increasing the happiness of an individual couple. And like, if I were infertile, I have kids, but if I were infertile, I would have seriously considered doing IVF because I wanted to have children more than anything else in the world. And I knew that if I didn't, it would just leave like a sadness, an indelible sadness on my soul that I would carry with me through the rest of my life. But on a broader scale, when you remove the individual human suffering, which I know is, this sounds unemotional, but on a broader scale, I think that what we're doing is going to have wide-reaching genetic implications because we are, we're bypassing, there are a lot of mysterious things about conception that we don't really understand. Like in pregnancies, in any given pregnancy, half self-abort before 6 weeks. So most women don't even realize that they're having these chemical pregnancies because they're not pregnancy testing. In the past, they wouldn't have known. So there's a biological mechanism by which a woman's body recognizes that there's something up with the embryo and her body just nopes the embryo out. And now we know that this is happening all the time. But when you are using science and you're using data and you're using visual cues and you're using the process that we discussed earlier with the cell analysis, you're bypassing those mysterious processes to select sperm and to select embryos for health and fitness. And I think that the implications here are not yet realized, but they're going to become obvious over the next 20 years. And we already know that children born of IVF have more problems, even when you select the embryos for fitness. So they have more ulcerative colitis. They have more digestive issues. There are higher rates of pregnancy complications, which might be because their self-selection, their selection bias in the women that get IVF. And then they have a higher rate of autism. They have a higher rate of other mental health issues and other diseases and cancers. So like we know that this is not the ideal way to get pregnant and have a child. I mean, we need to be trusting our bodies to do these things. And if they can't, trusting that maybe that is the best thing for humanity, although on a personal level, it's devastating.
Do you think this is actually a hidden cause of what they call the mental health crisis? You know, they were talking about this on the radio the other day, that there are so many kids now, so many, not just kids, but adults who are in their early 20s who are neets, you know, knowing, yeah. Not in education. I can't remember what it stands, but you know, they're neets, and they, you know, they're not even looking for a job because they've got so many, you know, ADHD and autism and all these different things that they're not even good for the workplace, something like that.
Right, right.
Do you think this is a hidden reason behind that, or are the numbers not big enough?
I don't think the numbers are big enough, but I'm sure it's contributing in a small way. Like all things, this is multifactorial. I think it's being brought up in divorced households or by single parents. I think that it is, there's some like chemical component maybe. I think it's the food that we eat. I think it's vaccines. I think it's diagnosis drift. Like a lot, you know, I don't know how old you are, but I'm 38, and we were growing up, a kid would just be weird, you know, like that kid's weird. He didn't have this slew of mental health conditions. And a lot of times they kind of just grew out of it and it was fine. But now everybody's neurodivergent or some.
Everybody's neurodiverse. Yeah. I mean, you know, my missus was doing this course where she was going, you know, she was learning all these different ones. I had a different one every week. Dark triad, narcissistic. You
know. Well, are you dark triad?
I got them all. I got the set. Autistic, you know, ADHD. Name it, I've got it. You know,
right?
But I haven't. I've never been, you know. But long time viewers of this channel would insist that I'm autistic, but I'm not. look at how I've been able to joke and rapport with you. Autists couldn't do this, you know.
It's true. You don't seem autistic.
but you know, older mothers is also a cause.
Oh yes, older mothers,
hidden cause of all of this. Mm-hmm. Now, the thing is with this is that, I mean, I've known people who've had, you know, who've had IVF, and you know, this is one of those things though that if you went. If you called into LBC and said the stuff that you've said into me, the host would be going like, oh, you monster. How could you take away, right? This woman has wanted nothing else ever than to have a child. And like, who are you to take this choice away? And I know that's how the conversation would go. Mm-hmm. If you started to kind of make these sorts of points, how do you even overcome that? How do you start to have that conversation in our society?
Well, I think that we are fundamentally solipsistic because we're secular societies, and that nobody is really asking the question, is this better for humanity? They're asking, is this better for me? Now, I'm not downplaying the personal cost of not being able to have a child. It is devastating, and it can be ruinous. But like all terrible situations in life, sometimes you have to take the hand that is dealt to you, and you have to overcome it to the best of your ability. And it's not to say that if you have a child that it's all going to be great anyway. I mean, was it Kierkegaard that said that what you want most might actually be your ruin? Like, you can have a child through IVF that you want desperately. That child is a psychopathic murderer, or that child dies in some horrific tragedy, right? We do at all times, and everything that we do, have to be finding the truth and evaluating things from a moral perspective and deciding if this is good for humanity and if it's good for white people. And mm-hmm. I question, and this is where Malcolm and what's his name? Malcolm and Simone Collins, where they come in, because they would argue that they are bringing in the most fit, the most well-adjusted children into a home. But I would argue that bringing them into their lives in this way is inherently ill-adjusted. It's a really dysgenic way, although they're trying to play it up like it's a eugenic thing. This is a dysgenic way to bring children into the world. And they, I don't know how, but they will pay for this at some point.
Can you just unpack, like, why is it inherently a dysgenic way of bringing kids into the world, in your view?
Well, because it's fundamentally unnatural. And I've just been around long enough that when you do things in a way that's not intended for your body, for mankind, that there are always externalities. There are always these negative externalities. And people act like nothing bad could come out of this. But we are already seeing an uptick in all those things that we just discussed, health problems, mental health problems. So we know that there are externalities. And how many hidden externalities are going to emerge as the science, as CRISPR becomes more accessible to the average individual? And we know from the vaccine that people are going to be faced with worse fertility, that they're going to have more fertility structures, more fertility issues. I read a study recently that the mRNA vaccine depletes 30 to 60% of your primordial egg follicles. So women are going to have fertility issues in future because of the vaccine. They're going to be using IVF to overcome these. And then whatever stuff happened because of the vaccine is probably encoded in DNA. It's going to be passed on in future generations. I mean, or the mRNA vaccine itself. So I don't know how, but something bad is going to come from this.
Yeah, I mean, what is the level of trait selection that this thing, because, I mean, you know, you can come up with all sorts of like nightmare sci-fi scenarios. In this country, it was a news story earlier today or yesterday that this woman has been done for modern day slavery, right? Because she looked after this girl 20 years ago or something for a weekend and like kept her there for 25 years.
Yeah.
People living next door to her thought this girl had left like 10 years ago when she was secretly still there. But what I'm thinking is, if you can select traits, what's stopping some dark person like that being like, well, I want the trait for passivity, for submissiveness. Okay, I'll take the trait for... But you can see how it might go. This was the premise, wasn't it, of Brave New World?
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, I mean, yeah, it's not difficult to think of how it could get dark. Or what about going the other way? What if the army get their hands on it?
Uh-huh.
And, you know, you're right, we're going to select these people now to be good soldiers or something. Right, we'll take out their, you know, we'll ramp up their ability to follow orders, right? But we'll also ramp up their whatever it is, give them big muscles, good aim, whatever.
Right.
We're making soldiers. I mean, if you could, you know, then you start going into questions of, are these people that you're making really human?
Right.
If you're messing about with them. And I'm not even messing around. I mean, like, that would then be a question, wouldn't it?
Right. And I don't trust anybody to be able to enforce legislation for the morality and the ethics of IVF. I mean, there are like thousands and thousands of rape kits that haven't even been processed in Chicago. Like, I don't think that we have the resources to be able to deal with this on an ethical level. But we're already seeing an inability to do that because look at all of these gay couples that are using IVF to have children. And, you know, they have such a huge problem with pedophilia in their culture. I mean, how many of these kids are being created to be sexually abused? And that's a conversation nobody really wants to have. But I just have a problem with human life formation that removes the humanity. And I think that there are going to be consequences for this.
So you take Dave Rubin's kid off them, off him?
You monster. Oh, for sure. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
A monster. See, but again, you know what you, I'm saying is, in our society, you know where the conversations are going to go. Like, on what pretext are you going to be able to do this? And this is it, I guess, is that once you've removed the original moral framework, it's very hard to make the case then. So, well, how do you know if this, that, or the other about Dave Rubin? Or, you know,
Exactly. Right.
So, yeah, very interesting. I was not actually aware that this couple that you mentioned, I've seen them here and there, but I thought they were just having lots of kids. I didn't realize there was this trait selection business going on as well.
It's dark. Yep.
But you're saying people like JF support this, or I imagine Ed Dutton supports it.
I'm not sure about Duddy. I'm not sure about JF either, although he's really into genetics, so I would imagine that he's sympathetic to it. But JF has his own thing of immediate insemination. Did you see what he's, I think it was in Mandarin, he made a little blurb to Chinese women to come over to Canada and live in his Canadian shack so he can promptly inseminate them.
If you're in China and you're watching this, if you listen to one thing I ever say, do not take up that invitation. Okay? That's all I'm going to say. Don't take up that invitation. So I better leave it there. I don't want to get into, some flame war with JF. But
what a nightmare.
Just don't. Things I've heard, I just wouldn't go. I wouldn't go there if I were you.
There are a few people that I would never want to piss off on the internet. I think JF is one of them. I would never want to piss off Candace Owens. And honestly, after I write one negative tweet about this Nick at the Club thing, I don't have the energy to go after Groypers like ever again. I'm just too tired. I'm too old. I'm too tired. I can't do it.
Well, where can people find you, Rebecca?
People can find me on my YouTube channel, Blonde in the Belly of the Beast. I am Rebecca Hargraves. I think you can search it that way. Find me on Twitter at blondes_tweets. Find my show, The Backlash, on my YouTube channel or our YouTube channel at Real Backlash. Thank you so much for having me on. It was such a pleasure.
Yeah, great. It was great talking to you. Seriously, though, have you seen that footage? No, I'll tell you. I'll just remind people, pick up a course at the academic agency. Sorry. Pick up a course at the academic agency. I think the Shorjan code will have expired by now, but you can still try it. And I'll catch you next time. Bye-bye. If you liked this video, be sure to like and subscribe. You can join the channel for thousands of hours of past shows in the archive and hundreds of videos. If you have any questions, you can leave a super chat or a super thanks, and I'll be sure to pick it up during my weekly office hours, which run every Tuesday afternoon. I also provide courses at the academic agency, which I encourage people to buy. Thousands of students now have taken the Trivium to improve their skills in writing, logic, and rhetoric. Just three of many courses available. Buy it now. But most importantly of all, friends, get out.